Do you know the author?
No, I don't, and I don't know the title either. But it's a blue book, and it kind of gives the whole story, you know.
I think we can help you.
Have you a real love of books and learning? When you have these two important qualifications, love for books and love for people, you may well consider the vocation of a librarian.
Just barely April 2010, and I'm Jason Puckett, and I'm joined by Anna Van Skoik, Rachel Borchard, and our very special guest, Buffy Hamilton, this evening. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
So, Buffy, thanks for being with us tonight. We're glad to have you as a guest. Why don't we just dive right in and sort of introduce yourself and tell us where you work and what you do, and we've got some stuff to talk about.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for inviting me to join you this evening. I am a high school librarian at Creekview High School in Canton, Georgia, and that's located about an hour north of Atlanta, and I serve 1,700 students and a faculty of approximately 100 teachers. Our school opened in 2006, and I had the honor of opening the library, and have taken great pride and joy in being instrumental in building the library program at Creekview High School.
Oh my gosh, you started it? I did. And,
it's been an incredible experience, and a lot of our listeners may know it more as the Unquiet Library, which is our brand.
And we'll link, which is also the name of your blog, and we'll stick a link to that in the show notes. So we were talking about the fact that you're the first school librarian we've had on, just by nature of the fact that the three of us know each other from working in academic library. Most of the people that me and Rachel and Anna know or have worked closely with have been academic librarians. So we're really glad to get some variety on the show. I know Anna's public now, but we're very excited to have a school librarian on. So, and you're doing some really cool work too, which we want to talk about. I want to commemorate just very briefly the fact that this is our first anniversary. This is volume 2, number 1, if we were using a different numbering scheme. So I can't believe we've been doing this for a year now.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just kind of kept rolling.
I was telling my husband that time, like, it's the year anniversary. I have to go do this tonight. He's like, really? It's been a year? He said, it doesn't seem that long. I'm like, I know, it's great.
I remember when we first started talking about, like, what are we going to be doing? Like, we're going to start running out of topics in a year. And here we are.
No.
Not yet, out of topics.
Not even close. We always run out of stuff to talk about.
It's true. Go
us. So, Rachel, you and Buffy and I were at Computers and Libraries in D.C. I thought maybe we'd talk about that a little bit just briefly. And then I want to talk about Buffy's Media 21 program, which sounds really super awesome. Buffy, you weren't there very long, right? You weren't at the conference for very long?
Sadly, no. I had another commitment with the Alabama Library Association that same week, so I had to leave town early, but the time that I was there was really exciting, and I personally enjoyed just getting to see colleagues and meet virtual friends for the first time, and it really sort of engage almost in my own mini unconference.
Yeah.
And enjoy conversations in small groups.
It's really a terrific conference. It's one of my favorites. I think I've talked about it before. I probably talked about it last year. It kind of hits the right sweet spot for me because it's not like so techy that it's you know, programmers and stuff that's over my head. I mean, some of the stuff is over my head, but it's all about sort of real practical applications and stuff from people who are really engaged with what they're doing. And I mean, at least half of it is what you're talking about, the unconferences that take place in the lobby too. So
yeah,
do they have a
did
theme?
You have like
I'm sorry, Jason. Was there a theme, or do they try to base it around one specific area, or how do I've never been.
not that I know of.
They do have like a loose theme every year. Mm-hmm. It was, what was it, Initiatives for Tough Times this year, something like that.
But it's not like a black and white kind of aspect.
No.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
It's pretty loose.
I could not discern any theme, and I didn't walk into it. So I don't know.
We had a loose theme on the internet at school's east side, and it was, you know, information fluency, information literacy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Did you Buffy? Did you have any like standout sessions that you went to?
Quite honestly, I did not get to attend any sessions because I spent most of my time there actually presenting, which is not a bad thing. But I was really fortunate to present on the internet at school's east side, and then I turned right around and joined the fabulous Bobby Newman and Matt Hamilton to talk a little bit about libraries and transliteracy.
Awesome. And so, Bobby was, we got to have Bobby on the show sometime. She was just presenting nonstop as far as I could see. Every time I turned around, she was doing another presentation.
She had several really great sessions, which of course I didn't get to attend, but I followed the Twitter stream very closely.
I went to one really good one that she and Maurice, friend of the program, of course, Maurice Coleman, did on training tools. It was like the 24th thing or something from the 23 things program, and they did like 30 tools in 20 minutes or something like that, and it was really just a really cool sort of fun rapid fire program where they just threw out a ton of like cool technology tools for training, and then they left time at the end for audience members to throw in, and it really amazingly got a sort of discussion going in one of those huge presentation rooms, you know, that seats 100 people or something. Actually got some back and forth discussion going, which is really hard to do. They did a really good job sort of working the room, and that was pretty good. Rachel and I did our podcasting presentation. Which went really well. And I credit a lot of that to Rachel. You know, we've done podcasting talks before, and I kind of went into it feeling like, well, we've sort of talked about this before. You know, is this going to be just sort of a rehash of what we've done before? Let's go ahead and try it. And we kind of started out with sort of reusing an outline that we had used before, but we used that as kind of a starting point. And Rachel, you really came up with some really good ways to freshen it up, I felt.
Oh, thanks.
I
say the same thing to you.
Okay, well, maybe we had some synergy going, because I felt like we really ended up with something that was a lot fresher and more interesting than just doing a rehash of the same podcasting talk we've done before. We kind of did less how to step-by-step stuff, and we ended up talking more about instructional design and best practices, and we actually ended up talking quite a bit about this podcast too, and you know, podcasting as professional development. So I felt like it went really well, and we had some really nice comments afterwards. So
From what I was not at CIL, but from what I saw tweeted, I saw a lot of great feedback. And I've got to give props to a couple of people who tweeted from computers and libraries, because they were just, I don't know any other way to put it, but freaking monkey fabulous. I mean, they were, who was it? Disobedient Lib, who is Dana Longley.
Yeah.
She,
Dana.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, great tweets. And it's just Kate also had, I mean, she just, they were great. I felt like I was there. It was awesome. But I think Dana, Kate, was at yours, and she said that she just, there was a lot of good feedback from what I had seen about your presentation. So kudos to you too.
I thank you. I think Dana did a better job tweeting our presentation than we did giving it. Her tweets, her Twitter stream for that, you know, 30 minutes or whatever that we were talking was better and clearer than our speaking notes, for sure. So
yeah, I agree. She was actually really helpful to have in the audience too. She asked very good questions.
She asked some terrific questions.
Oh, yeah. My favorite was, have you ever thought about bringing students into a podcast that's designed for students? And it was like,
no. Oh my God, what a slap in the head moment. Of course.
Right. We just kind of looked at each other and went, no, because we're stupid. We've never heard
that. It's like, I wish I could go back like 2 years in time now and just set up a new podcast that way.
Well, my podcast at Georgia State for students has kind of fallen by the wayside just because I've gotten so busy with new job duties in the last semester. I'm planning on revitalizing it, hopefully in the fall. Christian, who has been on our show before, is our creative manager, and he and I are planning on working on that together. And we've kind of left it too much in my hands, and then when I got busy, it fell by the wayside. but we're planning on getting some other people in on it, and hopefully revitalizing that for the fall. So.
And you know, that actually ties in nicely into one of my favorite sessions that I saw at CIL, which was Meredith talking about why so many 2.0 initiatives fail.
Oh yeah,
and like how to avoid it. And it was just like, duh, the whole thing was a big duh moment. And one of the things that she had said, I know, it's like, you don't realize it until someone tells you. And then it's like, yeah, that makes perfect sense.
I wish I had seen that. That sounded great. Yeah.
It was great. This is Meredith Farkas, by the way. Sorry. one of the things she said was, one warning was the lone librarian. When you have one librarian who's excited about this new technology and starts it, and then, you know, inevitably they get busy, they move, you know, something happens and it mm-hmm. falls by the wayside, and then you have a dead technology.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. That's exactly what happened to me. So
yeah. Lesson learned.
So I have one awesome work story that I want to tell before we start talking about it is actually instruction related before we start talking about Buffy's program. This happened today. I have mentioned, I think on the last episode or previous episode, that I've been working with some classes for the first time because of the aforementioned new job duties. And this class that I've been working with, the history of journalism, history of news media class, that I've been doing all of these intensive one-on-one consultations with, and I've been working really closely with a lot of these students over the whole course of the semester. This afternoon, I was sitting at my desk, and I heard a student come into our office suite and say my name and say I have something for Jason. And I turn around, and it was one of the students from this class that I had helped. He had brought me from the class a box of chocolates and a thank you card that all of the students that I had worked with had signed.
My gosh.
I wanted to cry. I was so touched. All of the work that I had put in with these guys and everything, and they were just so grateful, and they had bought me a big, nice box of candy. So I was really touched.
Wow.
Oh, that's so thoughtful.
So it was just
that
like
is
an amazing,
so nice.
An amazingly nice, and just to have this little thank you gesture from this class that just meant so much to me. So I know they're not listening, but thanks, you guys. You were great to work with. I loved working with this class. I loved working with this class. They were just terrific students. So. Anyway,
that's awesome.
So that's it. Anybody else got any great stories, or do we want to dive into Media 21?
I want to talk Media 21, although I don't want to cut Rachel off because I know she's got a lot going on.
I do have a lot going on, but nothing that's like pressing. I don't know.
Podcast.
I'll talk about it next month. Yeah, nothing Buffy. That's like really formalized. So let's talk about Media 21.
Buffy, what's Media 21?
Well, Media 21 is a program that, a year ago was really just sort of a vision. Our school district has two technology integration programs for educators. There's the Teach 21 flavor for classroom teachers, and then Media 21 for School Library Media Specialist. And in this program, you take courses that focus on teaching pedagogy, teaching strategies, and different approaches to integrating technology into your instruction. So the focus is really on the teaching and learning and not so much the shininess, if you will, of the tools, but how do you go about harnessing the power of those tools, whether it's, kind of traditional sort of software programs or, Web 2.0 cloud computing type of resources. And after you complete X amount of coursework and maintain a portfolio and do regular reflections via your blog, you are ready for the culminating project, which is the capstone project. And typically, it's submit their proposals, which are research-based, in the spring to the district's Technology Services Committee. And so a year ago, I knew I was approaching, that time to do my capstone, and I really saw it as an opportunity to be a vehicle for implementing a lot of initiatives that I felt would be really important for creating some really rich learning experiences and helping my students to develop richer information literacy skills. To do this, though, I knew that I needed a classroom teacher to really partner with me because I wanted to work side by side and have this rich level of collaboration. I didn't want the instruction to be just sort of an isolated unit, but I wanted the research and learning experiences to be integrated into a content area class. And so I reached out to a fellow colleague, Susan Lester, who teaches primarily 10th grade English, but she also works with English as second language learners in our school. And I chose Susan for several reasons. We had collaborated pretty extensively in the past, so we had a good rapport. But I also knew Susan to be a teacher who is a risk taker. And to ask a teacher to share their classroom with you for an extended period of time really is a major commitment and requires, I think, a little bit of a leap of faith. And I knew that Susan was the person to do that. So, I ran my ideas by her. And kind of the model of learning that I had in mind was really influenced by the work of people like Dr. Michael Wesch, Henry Jenkins, Howard Rheingold, and Wendy Drexler, who actually has just finished in instructional technology. She was a classroom teacher. And really what I was focusing on was thinking about how to help students engage in creating personal learning environments, and that I wanted them to kind of go beyond the traditional information literacy instruction with just databases and website evaluation, but to think about how could they engage in social scholarship and, what does it mean to be a good digital or a positive digital citizen? What is cloud computing? How do we use those tools for not only accessing information, but for sharing and creating our own content? And so Susan was really excited about these ideas and totally jumped on board. And so I wrote the proposal and then, of course, got her input. And together we submitted that document. It received approval, I guess it was late May. And as part of this project, I also received for my library an additional 16-station laptop cart, which was the primary investment as far as hardware or additional technologies. We did receive some additional flip cameras, and my principal very generously agreed to purchase 3 new databases for us, as well as 10 sets of novels, because part of this project has involved the use of literature circles. And so we began at the very beginning of the school year, August 1st, and essentially, we kicked off the year together, and very quickly, the students, I think, came to see me not just as the school librarian, but really as the co-teacher of the class. And so we began this really exciting, scary journey of really delving into a lot of new topics, or kind of just going beyond, you know, some surface introduction to these tools. And in August, we primarily focused on introducing different kinds of social media. And something that was really surprising to me was how little the students knew. I suspected for some time, this idea of the digital native was a myth.
Oh, I'm so skeptical about that. Yeah.
Well, believe you me. That illusion was quickly shattered. And the kids, you know, they really honestly didn't know about blogging or Twitter, or just ways that people were using social media kind of beyond just, fun, sort of personal interaction. And so we really spent several weeks just focusing on ways that people were using social media in the classroom for educational uses, but also out in the real world, for business and for social good or for social justice type causes. And while we were doing that, we were very gently introducing a few tools at a time, like Google Documents, Gmail. Most of them, weren't familiar with iGoogle or Gmail. We introduced some basics of like SlideShare and some other tools, and just, try to kind of build their toolbox, but give them time to kind of muck around with it. And then that took roughly about 6 weeks. And then after our September break, we spent essentially the rest of the semester researching issues in Africa and simultaneously meeting in literature circles, so that the fiction and nonfiction reading was kind of informing their research on their issue of choice related to a country in Africa. And then in turn, the research was influencing and informing their readings and their groups. And so it was at this point that they began building web portfolios. They were blogging their reading journals. They had research journals that they blogged. It was really insightful and powerful for us, I think, as well as them, to see how those tools really kind of changed the way that they viewed learning. They created wikis. They worked in groups. And then the culminating aspect of that project was a class presentation, and they learned principles of presentation Zen. And at first they really were terrified. I mean, most of them have not done any kind of presentation. If they had, it was a traditional copy paste bullet PowerPoint. And they initially were kind of apprehensive, but we spent a couple of days learning, how do you find Creative Commons licensed photos using advanced search and Flickr. And we looked at a lot of different examples of other people's presentations that, kind of exemplified those principles, and they caught on so quickly. It just amazed me that we gave them about 10 class days to work on these presentations, and they were so engaged. And many of them commented in their blogs that this was actually one of their favorite things, because they were getting to be creative. At this point, we had finished a traditional paper, and that they were working on the presentation. They were creating multi-genre elements in their learning portfolios to kind of an alternate way to represent their learnings. But in the end, they did their presentations. I think maybe one student used a tiny index card, and this was a student who was extremely nervous, and so we wanted to try to give her a little bit of a security blanket. But all other 50 students got right up there to talk. And that was just so exciting for us to see. And our principal came in, and he leaned over and he said, how are they doing this? They don't have note cards. They don't have bullets. It was because they had truly mastered the knowledge. And then we're interpreting it and sharing it and their views on it, in their own unique way. And we use Google Forms for them to do self-assessment afterwards. And the comments that the students made just really made us feel like, we had made that choice and going in that direction, because nearly all of them commented that they couldn't just copy and paste the information. They really had to know how to synthesize and evaluate it. And they were forced to connect with the audience. And they all were eager to do it again. And we're actually now getting ready to do our final round of that with veterans issues they've been researching the last 10 weeks or so. And we start those presentations in about a week. So I'm excited to see what they're going to do.
Buffy, I have a stupid question. What grade level are these?
Oh, I'm sorry. These are 10th graders.
Oh my God, these are 10th graders?
These are 10th graders.
See, this sounds like a senior, a final senior project or something. That's amazing.
We're going to video some of the presentations this time. I think we're just really a little too nervous to do that last semester, but their confidence has grown so much since the holidays that we've been reunited. We did take up about a 6-week hiatus from January to, about two months, to late February. And then we were reunited in March. And honestly, I kind of felt lost there for a couple of months because literally there's two class sections. They meet fifth and seventh periods. Literally, I taught side by side with Susan, the classroom teacher, every day. And so, suddenly to not have, I missed that, interaction with her and with the students. And so I was very excited to start back up in March. And we've added some new layers of tools this semester. And what's really been exciting this time is we introduced Evernote as an additional option for social bookmarking. Digo didn't work so much for them, and I think part of that is just because it wasn't playing nicely with Internet Explorer in our environment, which right now is the only browser we have access to. But the kids have latched on to Evernote. They love it, and they like making their notebooks public and thus interacted with their NetVibes information dashboards they've created, and they love NetVibes. And so they've been using NetVibes to kind of create a digital representation of their learning tools and learning journey. And so they're embedding things like RSS feeds from their blogs as well as their classmates' blogs that they might be. They're embedding videos, podcasts. They are now embedding their multi-genre elements. It's just been exciting to see a lot of them, too, just kind of took off and started adding their own tabs and adding content that they thought was appropriate, either as it related to their research and or their reading, because we did do the lit circles again this time. So it's just been a joy to watch them grow. And a lot of them come in voluntarily during their lunch period. I affectionately call them the lunch bunch. And they not because they have to, but they bring their food in and they work together and they help each other out. And they'll come and ask me to read this and help me proofread it. Or I'm thinking about creating a voice thread, and here's what I've got in mind. What do you think? And there's a lot of idea sharing and collaboration, and to me, that's really what learning is about, and it's just been exciting to be able to have some role in providing that kind of experience for them.
Okay, I have a ton of questions about this.
I know, I've been taking all these notes.
Incredibly exciting. It's so fantastic that the school backed you up on this, to the point of buying you what sounds like a fair amount of hardware. They put some real money into this program, it sounds like. That's just fantastic. So who are the students? You have two sections of 50 students total, right? And it's you and the teacher.
Yes.
You and the regular classroom teacher. Are these honor students? Is this an elective? Is this just anybody can sign up for it or what?
It's actually 10th grade world literature and composition, which is a required English course. Both sections are considered to be honor students, although it's definitely not, more of the AP type of course. This is really just, in a lot of ways, what I would consider to be, just sort of your mainstream student, that they have a lot of diverse gifts and talents, but they're, they work hard, and again, it's been interesting too to see that a lot of them were very used to more traditional means, solitary individual learning, take the test, spit back the answers, because this really is the first generation that's grown up in the era of No Child Left Behind. And while a lot embrace the opportunity to think outside the box, for others, you know, this sort of inquiry approach and, you know, learning how to work more with others and this collective intelligence, it pushed them out of their comfort zone. And there was, you know, some resistance. And so something Susan and I really had to think about and help the students with was, you know, how do you acknowledge and I think, you know, even honor that discomfort a little bit without, you know, demeaning or patronizing or, you know, making them feel threatened. And then how do you kind of, you know, help them work through that discomfort? And I can honestly say to really, you know, latch on to something and take pride and have ownership of that learning, you know, you just can't measure that with a standardized test.
This is a lot of, it sounds like, you know, sort of very independent and collaborative work of the kind that I would expect, you know, mid-level undergrads that I work with to be doing, that kind of collaboration and that kind of inquiry-based learning. So I'm really, really impressed that you've got high school kids doing this.
Well, thank you. I'm just really incredibly grateful, you know, that to have this opportunity and, you know, to have a classroom teacher that shares that vision. And what's really exciting now is that we've had other teachers dropping in, and they've been observing what's happening. And I have at least three additional teachers who would like to implement a similar learning model for next year. And Susan and I will be working together again next year with a group of seniors. And we don't know if this is going to work out because scheduling is always a logistical challenge. But we're hoping to try to loop this current group of students with one of the teachers that wants to get on board with this model of learning. And I would really, if that happens, I think not only would it be an incredible experience for the students to have that kind of learning model reinforced another year and to be able to take their information literacy skills to the next level, but, you know, if we could get permission even to do some action research, I think that could be very insightful for us as librarians and educators.
Buffy, have you given any thought to how you might, like, assess this, both, like, at the end of your class? And I'm thinking of, like, what a joy it would be if I had any of these kids in college. And, you know, like, to be able to ask them, you know, like, 1 year, 5 years, whatever, however long down the line, how it might have affected, you know, any number of things that they end up doing in the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
I think it would be so cool. Because, I mean, there's so many skills that they're learning. Like, I'm even thinking of, like, Toastmasters that I had to take growing up and how difficult it was because you aren't fully engaged in a topic, and it sounds like it's such a better way to learn how to be a presenter, which you never really get to learn. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm super excited.
It is exciting. You know, I'll be the first to tell you, when I think about, yeah, my skills as a librarian, I think assessment is probably the one that I'll tell you right off is one of my areas that I have to really work at. Most of our assessments that we've done to this point have been more qualitative in the terms of, you know, collecting their work samples, collecting narratives from them. We've used surveys. We've used Google Forms to get feedback. We, you know, have been looking for some type of maybe a little more data-driven measurement tool. And that just hasn't quite worked out for us yet. But we're already thinking about that for next year. How can we strengthen and add to our assessment toolbox to try to get, you know, a better sense or a broader sense of you know, what's happening for students with this.
I hope you're going to be writing about this after, you know, after the year wraps up or maybe after next year and you do another batch. I mean, you could write and present about this for some time to come. You realize that you could do the conference circuit pretty successfully on this program for a while, I think.
Well, there's some presentations I think in the works, which hopefully actually we're planning on the students assisting in some of those presentations, letting them actually be a part of the presentation, and trying right now to just do some informal writing that I hope might grow, you know, down the road into maybe a journal article or, again, potentially a research project down the road.
Now, Buffy, you had said that they had done presentations, kind of their fine. That was their final, quote unquote, final, I guess,
right.
Assignment that they did last semester or that
right.
whatever week period that you had them. But you said that they were also keeping blogs. Is that right?
Yes, and they are using WordPress.com for their blogs, and primarily they've used the blogs for their reading journals as well as what I call research reflections, because I felt like it was really important for them to engage in some metacognition about
right. yes.
you know, their research strategies or for research, and I think that's been a powerful thing for them, because, you know, so many times I think, and especially when you're at that age, it's so easy to focus on what you don't know,
mm-hmm.
Or, you know, in this current, you know, sort of assessment-driven world, as far as a standardized test, you know, that it's easy to get hung up on that. And it was really interesting. One other thing we did do at the end was, you know, we collectively, you know, looked at their blogs and as a group, asked them to brainstorm, what things do you think now, you know, you can learn or you're beginning to master? And it was really fascinating to kind of see the looks on their faces as, you know, we're typing this into Google Docs on, you know, using the big drop-down projector, and, you know, they're calling out things, you know, they've done, and, you know, they're looking back, you know, they have their laptops, they're looking back at their blogs and identifying skills. And, well, I mean, I think they were too, but I was just about moved to tears, because, you know, you really don't realize until you take stock and kind of reflect, wow, look at what all I've learned, and I can do this now. And,
right.
and it's things that just were never another, the next level. I think that's what it's all about.
I think there's something to be said for when you were, again, I'm totally an advocate for the reflections that you were talking about that they were doing via the blogs. I think that, unfortunately, when we think of assessment, a lot of times it's that quantitative. It's that, you know, wrong, right, black,
yeah.
white, whatever. I can't think of another dichotomy. But anyway, but with the reflection, you really, when I had taught a course, and believe me, my course paled in comparison to what you're talking about now. I'm embarrassed to ever even show anybody the portfolio from that course. But it really showed, it shows their process of thinking and how they chose things, and when they came to a fork in the road and what they decided to do here and why they decided. I mean, there's a lot to be said for that than just when did Columbus sail the ocean blue, you know, kind of thing. I just
yeah.
think it's there's so much more there, and it's hard to measure it per se, but you can, I don't know, I just think there's a lot of information there for a teacher and the learner as well.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot to be mined, and my research background at the University of Georgia definitely had very much a qualitative bent.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's, you know, that and ethnography are really you know, my strengths as far as research and data collection. So, you know, it's not really that surprising. That's kind of the way that I've gone. But as you mentioned, I think for me it's been very informative, and, you know, but at the same time, certainly, you know, I'm open to other assessment tools that, you know, if we find something that we think is the right fit, you
mm-hmm.
know, then we'll add it to our toolbox and see what we can learn.
Right. And also it kind of lets you see them, how they worked through it and how they learned it. And I don't know, maybe I'm not articulating it right, but it's just, I think it's an exciting component to what you're doing.
Yeah, it's really been fascinating. And I think, you know, for them too, to, you know, take stock and, again, just engage in that active reflection instead of just, you know, mindlessly, you know, trying to meet the requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And this was kind of interesting too, just as an aside. You know, the first semester they had the traditional paper as well as, you know, the blogs, and they had their Lit Circle wikis, they had their individual Google site portfolios. For the paper, I believe, if I remember correctly, the paper only had to be 3 to 5 double-spaced pages. What was fascinating to Susan and I, well, every student not only exceeded the minimum number of sources, and we used Noodle Tools to document those. Our district has a subscription to that. But almost all of them wrote between 10 to 12 double-spaced pages. And not so much, you know, it's not the length or the quantity, but just the fact that of their own free will that they went above and beyond.
Right.
And these are not students who, you know, some AP or honor students are very focused on, you know, the A. They are not of that mindset. I honestly think they did this just because they were interested and they wanted to share what they learned. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of funny, this semester we didn't require a written paper. They do have some narrative parts, some iSearch elements that they're embedding on their Google site and NetVibe portals. But, it's funny because it took them a few weeks to really kind of get their head around the fact that, oh, there's not the traditional paper. And so this digital format with the NetVibe portal, it took them a little bit of time to get used to it, but once they got their heads around it, many of them have really just flourished. Some have preferred more Google sites, but majority of them, once they got a handle on NetVibes, they've just flourished, and it's just been really exciting to watch.
It sounds like they were doing so much in this class. I mean, they're must have been a certain amount of traditional sort of, I don't know, traditional scholarship kind of work as well, but they're also learning all of these technology tools at the same time. So when you were setting out sort of the high level learning outcomes of this class, the tools were must have been part of the you'd planned as well, is that right?
Yes.
I mean, you wanted them to learn how to do some of this stuff in addition to how to use these cloud tools and things like that as well.
Yes. And, you know, we did not, you know, administer a skills test or anything, but, you know, just for them to get the fundamentals, you know, so they could feel comfortable using it and showing them just some different possibilities for how they might use that. And then it's been kind of fun, too, because sometimes questions will come up and somebody will say, oh, yeah, you know, here's how you make your Google document public. And, yeah, they'll come over and, yeah, they'll come to my little station. They'll show it on the big screen. And that's exciting me, too, is that, you know, they're becoming the experts. So they, you know, they're very good about sharing not just the tips for using technical tools, but another new skill they've learned this semester is how do you go about finding an expert on your topic to interview? Because we did require for them to either do a Skype face-to-face or email interview with an expert on their topic. And so that's been a whole new grand adventure, and they're actually going to be blogging about that tomorrow.
That is awesome.
That is awesome.
And that's been a big learning curve for them and for us. But that's they're going to be blogging that process tomorrow. So I'm real excited for them to share, yeah, the joys and the challenges that they've encountered with that.
When you had them do this sort of reflective discussion about what you've learned so far, was there anything that really surprised you that they said that you weren't expecting to hear?
You know, it's really interesting. You know, some remarked that on the final self-reflections that we did with Google Forms, several commented that even though, you know, maybe they had a certain grade, that they felt like they had learned so much more than we reflected, and that was okay because they had learned something that they were wanting to hang on to or to use again. And so that was very powerful. It was also really interesting, though, to hear them talk about their plans to try to use it in other classes to try to extend that. And so, you know, without, you know, really working as in-depth with some of their other teachers, I've not really had a sense of, you know, how much they followed through with that. But, you know, sort of one of my grand visions, and I talked a little bit about this on my personal blog this week, you know, would be if I could be an embedded librarian with an interdisciplinary team. You know, Susan and I were talking about last Friday, you know, what if we had an interdisciplinary team, and, you know, I worked with, you know, those teachers, and they got this kind of reinforced across the curriculum, and we were doing this, you know, cross-content kind of collaboration. I just, that's exciting to think about. And that's not, obviously, the traditional model in most high schools, but, you know, you kind of have to come up with these ideas and not be afraid to pitch them. And, you know, who knows, maybe down the road that might be something that would become a possibility.
I'm totally just marveling at all this. I think to me the most amazing thing is that your students feel like they're getting something more than a grade out of it. Because I think in today's education, that's often what's missing. Mm-hmm. Is the sense of that they're personally engaged and excited mm-hmm. about whatever it is that they're learning about. So, yeah. Bravo to you for well. Not only giving them a sense of empowerment, but also teaching them all of these tools that they're throughout their life without them even really realizing that you've exposed them to all these
right.
things.
Yeah.
I don't think that most students get that until well into their college career. You know, it's just sort of. Once you get into college and get into your major courses and kind of set your own destiny for what you want to study, that's when, to me, it seems like a lot of people sort of get that sense of, I'm getting more than just a grade out of this class. But I'm marveling to hear high school students say something like that about a class. That's really remarkable.
Yeah, and this was also interesting. Most of the ones who made that comment were the ones who maybe were more like, you know, low Bs, you know, that kind of thing. And so I was, you know, fascinated by that response. And we are going to be doing exit interviews with them, both one-on-one as well as some with video and then with the Google Forms these last few weeks. So I will be busy this summer mining the data, and then, you know, and we've told the kids, you know, already, you know, their feedback really is important to us because that helps us as their teachers to grow and learn and to try to do it better, you know, the next go round or to refine that process. And, yeah, I think they respect the fact that we listen and that, you know, throughout the year, if we saw something wasn't quite working the way we envisioned, or we realized, whoa, you know, we've got to back up because, you know, they're struggling with this. I think they've respected the fact that, yeah, we've modeled that sometimes that's what you have to do. You adapt, you know, your strategies and, you know, you just work through it. And so I've really become conscious of that in the last couple of months, in which we had a day in which we were trying to get into. They were learning how to add a Google RSS feed, and for whatever reason, it just wasn't working like it was supposed to. It was getting blocked by the filter, oddly enough. And so I said, okay, y'all, hang on just a second. I've got a fix for this. And so they're waiting, you know, for a minute. They're watching me do some kind of code button. And I didn't know it until after class, but one of the girls leaned over and whispered to Sue. She said, that's what I like about Miss Hamilton. She doesn't let anything stop her. And I just thought that was so cute. And then I almost cried because it just really made me very aware of, you know, how much they really are watching us. And, you know, I very much, you know, want to honor, you know, that respect and that sense of responsibility that I feel to give them the very best that I can and to listen to them and, you know, to try to give them the most interesting and well-rounded learning experience that I can, you know, with Susan and with their input.
Other questions, you guys? Anybody?
Actually, can I ask one more? I'm sorry. I know that we're, I don't know what we're doing, but anyway, Buffy, I wanted to know, what is your background? I mean, obviously you have your library degree, right?
Yeah.
And then what did you study in undergrad? How did you get to where you are?
Well, I did my undergraduate at Kennesaw State back when it was college, not university. It was a commuter school. My undergrad degree is actually in middle school education.
Okay.
But after I realized very quickly I was not a middle school person, so I turned around and added on my high school English teaching certification and was fortunate enough to land a job. And I taught high school English. I worked in our district's technology services department. And then I decided, well, you know, if I became a school librarian, that would be the best of all worlds. I get to do traditional reading, but I get to do technology. And so, very long story short, I was working full time. I went to the University of Georgia, and I actually started in school library media, but took a little bit of a detour and did my MED in English Ed in the fabulous language and literacy department there.
Yeah.
Yay. And then I turned right around and did ES in school library media and instructional technology under the direction of Dr. Marianne Fitzgerald. And you know, I've taught at our district's alternative school. I actually taught at our district's evening school the first 3 years that our library was open, which was really great, too, because, you know, that was where I tested a lot of my ideas. I did a lot of blogging and a lot of the cloud computing tools with them. And so, I think I sort of had a couple of years to warm it up a little bit before I implemented it into my school. But, you know, I guess I would just have to say I've been lucky to have a lot of great learning experiences in my career. And my graduate work at Georgia really, to this day, very much plays into and influences a lot of my thinking. And then, of course, my wonderful personal learning network, I really feel like has transformed my practice and my thinking in the last 2 years. So that's what I love about being a librarian. We just get to keep on learning and discovering new ideas.
We kind of have to.
I'm always fascinated. I'm always fascinated hearing people's kind of breadcrumb trail, you know, how they got to. Because no one says when they're little, I want to be a librarian when I grow up. So at least I don't know many people that did. So, but I just think it's interesting to hear your background and how you really have been able to tie those different passions and knowledge sources together into this current job. It's awesome.
I feel really lucky. I love what I do, and I'm in a great environment, and I'm very, very thankful to be in a place that I love and to work with such great students and people and to have a principal who supports my ideas even when they sound really crazy and out there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Buffy, for being on the podcast this month. We really appreciate it. This is fantastic, and I hope you'll be back on in the future sometime and tell us what you're doing next to follow up with this, because this just sounds like really amazing stuff that you guys are doing, really exciting.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a real honor to join you tonight, and I appreciate the opportunity to share with everyone a little bit about what we're doing with Media 21.
Cool. We're going to close it up there for another month. Thank you all for listening. Next month, I think we have another guest coming on. We'll confirm that on the blog before the next show. And thanks for listening. Bye. Adventures in Library Instruction is produced by Rachel Borcher, Jason Puckett, and Anna Van Skoik. It's released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License. To subscribe, go to our website at adlibinstruction.blogspot.com. Leave comments and suggestions on the blog or email us at adlibinstruction@gmail.com. Our opening theme song is Dropping Out of School by Brad Sucks, and our closing theme is Higher Education by the Napoleon Bonapartes. Both are available at magnatune.com.
Contact the library schools and the American Library Association. They are able to give you valuable advice.